Thank you for giving us this opportunity in Radio Dabanga. This is our first interview with you since you take your new position as a special envoy for Sudan. What is your vision about the Sudanese in general, Sudanese problem now in general, the war, the transition? How can we get out of this war?
Well, I think one of the things is we want to understand that the aspirations of the Sudanese people are not just for the absence of war, but for the restoration of the revolution and the return to a constitutional transition that the people fought so hard for just 5 years ago and for many years before that. We certainly need to see the violence come to an end. We want to see the silencing of the guns, and I think that's going to come from a pressure combination of the voice of the people, from the generals and leadership of the two sides agreeing to end the war, and frankly from external partners who care deeply about Sudan, helping to bring enough pressure to bear to see that peace emerge. But we know both the ending of the war and the rebuilding of the dream of a democratic future are primarily in the hands of the Sudanese people, and the U.S. government is trying as hard as possible to be an ally to the people of Sudan.
Let us start by the international community and the role of the international community. Yesterday you were in Paris for this humanitarian meeting. What is the outcome? What is the real outcome of this meeting for Sudanese? Is it giving hope for Sudanese, or it is a meeting like several other meetings that we heard about?
Well, to be honest, I was pretty skeptical there would be much for the people of Sudan, but we were very pleased, first and foremost, for the number of dollars committed, somewhere between $1.5 billion and $2 billion. The United States so far has given more humanitarian aid than the rest of the world combined, and that still has not been enough. As someone who was recently in the refugee camps in Chad, where even in areas that have no humanitarian access barriers whatsoever, we weren't getting three meals a day to people. We haven't been. We haven't been getting the psychosocial counseling for women, at least at a sufficient level. So one of our messages coming into Paris was, we can have lots of fancy statements of principles, but are you going to make contributions? And we credit the French for hosting an event where hopefully that will translate immediately into more humanitarian aid, particularly given the coming rainy season and the lean season, and that some of that aid, again, will reach inside. So on the humanitarian side, that was what the original intent of the conference, and I think there was a sense from the world that this has been the silent war, the silent famine, and just starting to hear the cries of the Sudanese people. On the standpoint of ending the war, we did get good news from Saudi Arabia that they are prepared to host a new round of peace talks within the next 3 weeks, by the end of the first week of May. And we think that is a very important forum, particularly if it's inclusive of key African and Arab partners, as they have pledged, where we can bring the parties together and hopefully find an end to this war. And we know ultimately that's the most urgent need for the Sudanese people, is ending this war, which will give people a chance to return who have, whether they fled internally or outside the country, millions, tens of millions of people, as you know, who are suffering in that way. So for us, that will be the measurement of success ultimately of Paris, is whether this kicking off this round of peace talks and the engagements with both African and Arab and European colleagues gets us in that direction. That's, I think, the result people want to see.
Okay, but people in the ground are complaining from that the assistance and the aid are coming slowly, and they are still under the control of the two belligerents.
We agree, and that's why we are not only trying to say there's not been enough aid, but certainly saying that both parties have done a miserable job of showing any respect for the Sudanese people in terms of access of just basic food and medicine across borders and across lines. And this is a fundamental rule of international humanitarian law, that you do not weaponize food and medicine. You do not starve people as a weapon of war. And we are deeply disappointed in both sides for the games that they're playing with people's lives. And we're at a level of fragility where this is truly a matter of life and death. And, you know, we think that this also would have been an opportunity, whether that's the end of Ramadan or Eid, for leaders of either the SAF or the RSF to show some care for the people, to open up that access. There have been small victories of a few trucks here, a few trucks there, but nothing of the scale that's necessary for the fundamental suffering and hunger of the Sudanese people.
So let us move to the Jeddah talks. What will be new about these talks? You spoke yesterday with the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Saudi Arabia, and you declared that there will be resumption of negotiation in 3 weeks. What will be new about this?
Well, we certainly hope that the most fundamental difference will be urgency to end the war. And I think for many of the neighboring countries, for hopefully our Gulf partners, there's an understanding that this war is hurtling out of control. That what's been a two-sided civil war is becoming more factionalized, more ethnic. It's more likely to bring in neighboring countries if left alone. And it's at a point where neither side has a credible path to victory on the battlefield. And in that way, if the war is able to continue, it will ensure that everybody loses and nobody wins. And I think that sense of urgency hopefully is there. We have certainly increased pressure on both sides with sanctions from the United States and other steps. We want to see this ideally as the last round of Jeddah because we are getting to a deal. Now, I don't want to promise that to the people because I don't have the power to will that into existence single-handedly, but I can tell you the United States is going to do everything it can to ensure that the outcome of this process is an end to the war and a restoration of the democratic process. But we will need that to be a consensus effort of countries around the world. We will need to see leadership from SAF and RSF. I think what we have continued to see throughout the last year, which is the voice of the Sudanese people being heard. And that's one of the things that I've tried to emphasize in Paris and in other places, which is, you know, maybe outside of social media, the Sudanese people are very united in the core questions about this peace deal, ending the war, ensuring full access to food and medicine, a return to the vision of a democratic future. People don't want to see this peace process as a backdoor way for disgraced former regime officials or extremists to find their way into power. And they want to see a unified professional military. It's been an important institution in Sudan and needs to be going forward. So, you know, we're trying to center those Sudanese voices and, continue to hear that echo. And again, with this anniversary, trying to make that something that the world is paying attention to far more than it has, far more than it should have.
What about including or Egypt and United Arab Emirates in Jeddah talks?
We have pushed very hard for them to be included. Our understanding as of yesterday is that they will be included along with African Union and other officials. We think that is an important way to make this a stronger process. We think, you know, some people have worried about forum shopping from initiatives lately. We've largely seen that as a positive thing, that we're seeing a stronger appetite of a larger number of actors who want peace, who want an end to the war. Now, they may not all want the same peace, but the fact is, I think more and more key countries understand that this war is costing an unfathomable number of human lives and human suffering, and is also costing regional stability. So we see all that as a positive convergence around the importance of ending this war. We think a more inclusive process is a positive part of that, and our understanding is that's what we'll be seeing with Jeddah, or some people call it Jeddah Plus.
Okay, what about the mechanism of ensuring an application of a ceasefire or a hostility agreement? Because Sudanese are speaking about international force, African force. They want to see other people. They don't trust these two forces now, and they want to see other forces to ensure that these agreements can be applied in the ground.
I think there are two parts of your question, and both of them are very important. So one is just the issue of enforceability overall. It's where many peace deals fall apart. It's always a challenge. It's certainly something we're thinking about and others are thinking about, and a place where it's really important for us to hear from the Sudanese people who they trust, what mechanism they trust. So first and foremost, I think that's just a key part of this. We have seen some important pledges come out of previous JETA rounds, and some of those were kept and some of those were not kept. And we can learn from those lessons. So on enforceability, very, very important. On the question of peacekeeping force, I think it's an important one to raise. We've been trying to start building the political appetite with multilateral institutions for some of the things that might be necessary as we go forward. And that's certainly one of the things that I've heard from Sudanese civilians as a key element of this. And, you know, one of those places where I think the Sudanese people will look at who stood with them in times of crisis. And it's a great opportunity, whether that's for the African Union or the United Nations, to potentially be a key part of sealing a peace deal and of really protecting it.
Is there any place for civilians, forces in Sudan, to be part of these JEDA negotiations? Because we cannot leave the whole process for the military.
They're already part of the process. I think this is one of the most important part of the processes, and one of the things that I've made clear to our counterparts around the world, which is we're not waiting for JEDA to negotiate. Negotiations are happening every day, every time I'm meeting with civilians, every time we're doing media work. All of this is part of building the political will and of centering the voice of civilians, and we, as the United States, have made that central. I think actually the question of whether people are physically in JEDA is actually a little overrated, having been in a lot of these discussions before. What we want is for the voice to be present and powerful. And what I think we are seeing from Sudanese civilians is exactly what can shape the negotiations, which is to be active, to be speaking out, and particularly where we see that Sudanese unity coming together. And, you know, I've been an activist in my life, and I've been a politician in my life. And politics is naturally a place of competition, not consensus. And that's fine. We don't expect there to be consensus around the questions of political parties, political leaders. But on the fundamental questions of what are the underlying values of the Sudanese people, what do they want from this process, that's where we see that consensus. And we think where we can ensure those voices are present, whether that's traditional leaders, resistance committees, whether that's women, youth, they're the ones who have borne the brunt of this. And those are the voices that we see already as being central to the negotiations. They're certainly central to shaping our values and priorities in this process.
There is also the question of justice and impunity. This is a very important question because this is not the fairest war. And every time there is a war in Sudan, there is impunity and injustice.
I think this is one of the places that is most important to hear from the Sudanese people. It's the question of justice and of transitional justice. To me is part of every negotiation, but the form it takes can be different. I've worked in countries where that's meant prosecuting the most vicious of the war criminals, where it's been a truth commission, where it's been traditional reconciliation mechanisms, and in some cases it's been all these things, right? And so this is, I think, needs to be a much richer conversation than a binary sense of do you have justice or not have justice? Do you have reconciliation or not have reconciliation? We, of course, need these things. The question is, what is the form that takes that's most important to the Sudanese people? So I think this will be an important question. And it's not just a question that's settled in one day or in one document. You've often seen countries over time have an appetite for certain parts of that process than others. And you have very different questions, right? You're going to have on one level the issue of the leaders and how the people want to see and a future for what future they want to see for those leaders. But you also have people returning to homes that have been burned or sacked or people who've lost family members. And that can be its own process of how do you go and try to coexist. And we have the issue, particularly as we see the language of hate speech rise. We see polarized language rising. And we understand when people are seeing their communities destroyed, that there can be an enormous amount of desire for kind of collective retaliation. We know that's not healthy and okay. We need to figure out with Sudan, how do you coexist as one of the most diverse countries in the world? So I think these issues of justice and reconciliation are essential. I think they will probably be part of the conversation of the peace deal, but they're also going to be conversations that last for many years in Sudan and hopefully will take many forms.
Last question. In your vision as a special envoy for the since for Sudan, is there any place for the Islamic movement and the NCP in the future transitional arrangement in Sudan? Because this is a divisive question in Sudan, between Sudanese politicians.
It's a good question, but I think it's also got a lot of different pieces thrown together in it. From the United States perspective, we start by listening to what the people of Sudan want. And I'll be honest, I don't hear a lot of appetite to bring back former NCP members. Does that mean anyone who ever had any office or any affiliation versus those who were leaders and have been known to be corrupt and problematic leaders? All I'm hearing is people do not want their suffering to be an excuse for people who had already lost power because they'd lost legitimacy with the Sudanese people to find a backdoor way into power. And on the other hand, I think going forward in a diverse democracy, and a healthy democracy, an inclusive democracy, I think there are questions over many years that can be had about, what parties can be part of that process. And that's what elections are for. And really the answer to that ultimately should be whether or not these are parties and ideas that have popular support, not whether they can backdoor in through corrupt means. And I think even the word Islamist means a lot of things to a lot of people. I think when you're looking at the kind of extremist ideology that people, many Sudanese fear is coming in right now through recruitment and money, that's something the Sudanese people oppose almost universally in my experience. On the question of Islam itself, obviously it's a very important part of culture for everyone in Sudan, whether Muslim or not. So on the question of what Islamism means to people, that can become so many different things. But on this issue of extremist ideology, on this issue of former corrupt officials, what I hear overwhelmingly from the Sudanese is not only that they don't want that, but they particularly don't want the international community to become the muscle through which these individuals are forced back on the Sudanese people. That being said, you have a long history, a long future ahead of an inclusive democracy, and I think there's plenty of room to have conversations down the road about that. But in the peace deal itself, I think, that's so far something we've heard pretty consistently from the Sudanese people, is they want their country back. They want their future that they haven't yet had. They don't want the worst of their past. They want the best of their future. And to the extent we as the U.S. government can be allies in that, we're gonna do so.
Thank you very much for giving us this opportunity, and thank you for your time. And
well, thank you very much, and thank you for continuing to do journalism at a time that that's been very difficult and not always supported and has some risks with it. And we know you reach many Sudanese people who do not necessarily have access to a huge amount of information. So we appreciate the role that Radio Demanga plays. And again, I think what we want to continue to do is both communicate to, but also really hear from Sudanese, particularly those still inside of Sudan. And we're going to make every effort to continue to do so. So thank you.
Thank you.
You said 30 minutes.